Hello, and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle. With me, your host, Joshua Smith. Hope everyone is having a wonderful, what is it? Is it Wednesday? I think it's Wednesday. I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday. Yes, because tomorrow's Thursday, and I leave for the Libertarian Party of Florida State Convention tomorrow. While the rest of the entire country is freezing their balls off, I'm going to be sitting on the beach east of Orlando in Melbourne, Florida, enjoying a margarita and laughing at the rest of you cold assholes. Just kidding. I love you to death. We've got a great show for you guys tonight. Of course, we'll start off with some sponsors. Check out toplobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great Break the Cycle pillow that you see on my couch every episode by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you can go ahead and join my Patreon, my Subscribestar, become a member of the YouTube channel under all of my videos by hitting join. I have lagged on the Patreon recently and shows and everything. But I am picking it back up again and getting everything together and working to be more productive for my supporters. So hopefully you guys are bearing with me and sticking around. We've been dealing with influenza A in the house for like 2 weeks, and my pregnant fiance is really, really sick. So it's been a mess. It's been an absolute mess. But we're getting through it, and things are getting better. But go check out Top Lobster, and of course, sign up for the Patreon and all that good stuff to support the show. And of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you own a business, go to anthemplanning.com. As soon as the show's over, unless you join the channel and go and watch the after-hours show that we do after every show for members only, then do it after that. But if you own a business, check them out. I promise you they're going to be able to save you money and time and headaches and all kinds of good stuff. Really awesome people. Great libertarians from the great state of Delaware and my good friends. So please support their business if you can. Guys, like I said, we've got a great show for you tonight. I'm very happy to be back on Break the Cycle this week. I've been trying to get the show scheduled for a long time. Not just scheduled, but actually it's been scheduled and it's been deleted like 3 or 4 times or something like that due to my own issues with the family and all that great stuff. But he is the host of the Blackbird podcast, my good friend and base gay, James Gentleman. Sir, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Josh. How are you? It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too, buddy. I'm glad you're here.
It's been a while.
It has.
Man, we were supposed to see each other in person today if it hadn't been for a damn blizzard in Minneapolis.
Yesterday.
Oh, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, time flies, dude. It's Wednesday now.
Wednesday. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I do some reselling, and we have like Marketplace and eBay and all that shit, and we sell all kinds of weird oddities. And so I do these like online auctions and get all kinds of really cool stuff to resell. And in fact, James lives where most of the auctions I do are, so I lean on him. Come on, man, go pick some shit up for me, please.
Yeah, it's my one occasion to get out of the house, so it's kind of nice.
Well, they usually ship shit. I mean, most of those auction houses in Minnesota, they'll like ship things for you, but they won't, like just a couple of them won't. And there's like things on there. I'm like, I really want this. And I'm only 3.5 hours away from Minneapolis. So it's like, I'll get up there. You know what I mean? It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I am coming up there next Wednesday to pick shit up though. So I'll be up there next Wednesday. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Shit. I'm going to PA for their LP convention. So
on Wednesday,
I think, hang on. Let me just look at my calendar. This is the most professional podcast you've ever seen in your
early,
life. Ladies.
Dude. You're going early.
Hang on.
I'm supposed to go Thursday.
Oh no, Thursday. Yeah. I'm leaving Thursday.
Yeah, I'm supposed to go Thursday. I'm going up to Minneapolis.
Oh, you're going to PA?
I'm supposed to. Yeah. We'll see if I make it or not, but it just depends on what's going on with the fam at that point. It's been pretty wild, but you got my Pinocchio doll. You got it with you? Is it in front of you right now?
I don't have it on me.
You were supposed to show and tell for the show.
I know. I was going to bring it to show and tell. And then, like, seriously, y'all, you have no idea how much snow is on the ground. It's up to my shins. Like, I can't walk out to my car.
Is it really that much out there?
Yeah, it's insane.
We didn't get hit that bad here in Iowa. We got about an inch. So, not too bad.
It makes me want to move back to Texas. Like, I love living in Minnesota. It's such a cool state. Like, yeah, we, our governor kind of sucks, but I mean, he was the first Democrat governor to lift the lockdowns.
Sure.
It was because of the George Floyd riots, but like, you know, I mean,
yeah, of course there's always some kind of ulterior motive, and we'll get into some of that later. Cause I want to talk about why everyone's lifting mandates right now and what's going on. And,
yeah.
I don't know if you've listened to the most recent Joe Rogan podcast with, I'm gonna butcher his name, but the past Muslim Islamist radical that turned freedom loving kind of libertarian,
Majid Nawaz.
That's it. Yeah, I always mess
that
up.
That open on Spotify right now. It's real tough for me to listen to Joe Rogan unless it's like Dave Smith or Michael Malice or somebody, because like I don't do anything for 3 hours. There's just nothing I do that. My attention span is just not long enough.
Yeah, I'm not like an avid Joe Rogan listener unless there's an episode that I really want to listen to. Like, of course, I listen to the Robert Malone, Dr. Malone interview. Of course, I listen to Dave Smith and Malice when they're on there. If he ever has Tom DeLonge back from Blink-182, I'll definitely be tuning in for that. But this newest episode, man, it was one of those ones. I knew he was going to go off, but I didn't realize how far they were going to go into this shit.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, dude, the Klaus Schwab stuff. And, I mean, he really dove in to the point of where I think that if Joe Rogan hadn't been canceled yet, he's going to be canceled soon. It was that far into things. I mean, he really he really took the COVID regime to task more than anybody I've ever heard on any of the big podcasts ever. So, but anyways, man, let's talk about you a little bit. So, I've known you for a long time now. We've been friends. You gave me a solid, amazing endorsement video. One of my favorites from, the last election season. But I don't know much about your story and how you became a libertarian, man. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to your senses, if you will, when it comes to liberty.
Okay, so I grew up in like a Republican, more or less family. My dad always called himself fiscally conservative and socially liberal. He was a fan of Steve Forbes, so like he's kind of been on the gold standard thing forever.
Sure.
Which is neat, because you know, I mean, when you're raised by a dad who believes in the gold standard pre-Ron Paul, you at least kind of have a head start. But he was also a fan of Rush Limbaugh and stuff like that. So I mean, we were like a conservative family, basically. But when I was in high school government class, my senior year, I took one of those little, it was the world's smallest political quiz. That one that we like pass out at county fairs.
Yeah. Libertarian made that, David Nolan, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's from the self-governance society or something like that, whatever it's called. Everybody who takes it comes out libertarian. It's very heavily skewed towards us. But I came out libertarian. I had never heard the word before. My professor, or not professor, you don't have those in high school. My teacher was a like Massachusetts liberal in Texas. Oof. You know. Oof. So it was sort of, you know, he sort of had to like make a statement. Oh, you can guess what my politics are. Ha 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 ha. One thing I do remember him telling us though, was that, you know, he goes, you think the president's the most powerful man in America, but in reality, it's the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. And I'll tell you why. And he kind of red pilled us on the Fed, which was kind of neat, especially coming from a liberal,
a college time, professor, guess, liberal at that.
Yeah. Yeah. A high school teacher. Oh, like, not even college.
That's even crazy.
Yeah. So there's that, this was in the year 2000. I was 17. I wasn't old enough to vote yet. But my dad had to travel for business. And I guess it had, I had like internalized third party politics enough to where my dad even told me, when he handed me his voter registration card, cause he's going to let me go fill out the ballot for him. Cause he had to travel, which, you know, my first act as a political actor was voter fraud, which is kind of cool. he goes, you vote for George W. Bush for president. I don't give a shit what third party candidate you vote down ballot. And I was like, all right, that's fine. So, I go vote for George W. Bush for president, forgive me. And then it was pretty much Libertarian and Green Party all the way down. I didn't really know what I was voting for at that point. Like, I knew that I had tested Libertarian on this weird test in government class. I don't know, like I came out as gay right after high school, and you know, back then, especially if you were gay, you were on the left. There was no, like, there was the Log Cabin Republicans. True. Which was kind of a bullshit Republican group. Some of them are pretty libertarian leaning, and you know, if I had to tell you right now, like, where I'm at, if there were no LP, I would be 100% on board with the Republican Party. And in fact, like if I had my way, I would completely dissolve the the National Libertarian Party. I think it's a waste of space. No offense to my LNC friend in front of me.
Hey man, I listen, you watch how I treat these people on the LNC, right? I don't feel differently than you, I promise you. But
I follow those conversations. It's some of the best drama in the world. So I was on the left. I was like a Michael Moore leftist. Howard Dean was my guy in 2004 because I was anti-war left. That was the big thing for me.
Right.
I'm thankful for the
anti-war left. Like they're kind of few and far between these days, but they're good, you know.
The war on terror and the Iraq War were my very first like real political issues.
Sure.
Prior to that, I mean, you had Monica Lewinsky. In fact, it's not my name. It's my like AOL screen name from when I was in high school. If you Google that, it's Jebby 2001, J-E-B-B-I-E 2001. You'll find the very first thing I ever wrote politically. That was on the Florida recounts in 2000. But after the Florida recounts in 2000, the Iraq War was just my first big thing. I was firmly anti-war. I had all the red-pilled takes that we have now. Like, look, even the CIA is telling the president that that Iraq doesn't have weapons of mass destruction. What are you people talking about? We knew this at the time. And I was kind of proud of myself for that. I still am. I mean, I was 18. 18-year-olds don't know this.
Sure.
So I was on the left, firmly on the left. I was gay. And then I had like a real religious conversion. I became a very strict traditionalist Catholic, to the point where I was toying with this Catholic kind of offshoot that's called Sedevacantism, that holds that the Vatican II. Yeah. So like the big thing that changed the Latin Mass into English Mass and ushered in kind of liberal Catholicism. And also they believe that the Pope has been an anti-Pope ever since John the 23rd in 1963. So like there just hasn't been a Pope. And so like these people are just the most like radically traditional Catholics, even more like radical than like Tom Woods and Lou Rockwell and stuff. I kind of fell into this group. So obviously you can't be gay and Catholic. So I picked Catholic over gay. I was reading all these Catholic blogs, and lo and behold, there was this one political candidate in 2008 who was both anti-war and pro-life, which is like the Catholic position.
Right.
Is this dude named Ron Paul. And also he happened to be a libertarian, and everybody knows that libertarians love the gay shit.
We're just like do whatever the fuck you want socially, man. We don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, back then the conception of libertarian is, and really to, I mean, now if you ask, like, I don't know, the chair of the Minnesota Libertarian Party, for instance, who I love, his name's Chris.
Yeah. Chris is a nice guy.
Yeah, he's great. But like, he's not like well-versed in libertarian theory. He doesn't get that. Like, no. Like there are like even bigoted, libertarians who, you know, I mean, I don't share their views, but like, I understand that you can be libertarian and also have abhorrent views.
Oh shit. Did you say it? Nick Fuentes? Calm down, buddy.
Fuentes!
don't be bigoted on this show. Okay.
Jeez. I know, dude, we're starting this like an hour late. I'm already two drinks in. So,
oh, nice. I'm nice. Pretty loose. Savage.
Yeah, I know. Here we go. You're going to get me a
Here we
shit.
Go.
No. what was I saying? Right. So this Catholic blogger found an anti-war pro-life presidential candidate who was also libertarian. He said libertarianism, this is the blogger. He said libertarianism is a philosophy for people without children. And I was like, I don't know, man, there's a lot of libertarians. Like there's a lot of people, including parents, who are behind this Ron Paul guy. So I looked more into libertarianism. It gave me permission to like pick back up the sort of what came naturally mantle of being gay.
Right.
And also, you know, some of the more sharp edges of my Catholicism kind of wore off thanks to studying libertarianism. And so that was kind of the journey. Ron Paul focused so much on the Constitution. So I was sort of like a constitutionalist, I guess. And then I heard Lou Rockwell and Tom Woods talking. I think it was on the Tom Woods show, but it may have been vice versa. But Lou said, he goes, "I'm no fan of the Constitution, but," and that kind of rocked my world. I didn't understand that libertarians could be like against the Constitution. What does that mean? I thought they were the same thing. So then I found LouRockwell.com, found the Mises Institute, found Murray Rothbard. For New Liberty was the sort of final nail in the coffin to make me a libertarian. I was identifying and living and whatever else as a libertarian until I would say like last summer. I'm still an LP member. I still am proud of the Mises Caucus and everything that they've accomplished. I'm not sure I'm real big on the libertarian label anymore. And like, you know, I'm giving up my board seat. I'm not going to be rerunning for LPMN, mostly because I want to focus on my podcast and on my businesses and that kind of thing. Cause I really want to be free. I don't want to just like talk about freedom.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Well, that's, I mean, we're going to get into this because you have been kind of in the middle of this, post-libertarian fight for a while. And you seem to be somebody who's like me that likes both sides of this, this big fight and this big argument. And somebody who really thinks that both sides are right about most things. You know what I mean?
And they're not incompatible. They think each other is incompatible. That's where I get, that's where I kind of get my panties in a twist.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I feel like we can all get along.
TJ Fitzsimmons, thanks for the $10 super chat, buddy. Said, James is a great Twitter follow. Love the show, Joshua. Good luck on the VC trail. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's sad to watch, you know, this especially the Tho Bishops and the Pete Quinoneses and the Jason Stapletons, and then you have the Dave Smiths and the Michael Heises and then you got some of these crazy agorists who are awesome too, you know. I love them all. I love them all. And I've talked specifically, you know, I had this 2.5 hour debate with Larkin Rose during Anarcho Polco. If you guys haven't watched it, go check it out. It was a really fun, good debate. I respect Larkin Rose. I think Larkin Rose is correct on
he's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think 99.9% of his positions are correct. Like, that's how much I agree with him on most things. But I disagree on political activism not being useful. I think that it is. That's why I'm involved in it, and that's why I do it. And I've seen it start to change some localities, which is what I think is really important. And so we had this long debate about it. But I still love the guy to death, and I think he's right. And I feel that way about everybody in this fight. You know what I mean? Everybody. It's been a hard thing for me to watch and kind of be caught up in the middle, because people are like, "Hey, tell that guy this. Hey, tell that guy that." And I'm like, "No, motherfuckers, I'm not going to tell anybody anything. I like you all of you." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, you mentioned agorism. I forgot that I had a couple of months where I was calling myself an agorist, to the point where my podcast started out as like a nominally agorist podcast. That was until Vin Armani, who I love and respect. But he was on my show. And then the week after that wrote this like just really scathing, shitty article about me. He didn't name me, but, he wrote an article for his $150 a year newsletter, talking about me. Like, he called me an armchair agorist because I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't like starting a farm and doing all my transactions in Bitcoin and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that I named all these people that I really like. I don't like Vin Armani at all. I fucking hate that guy to death. He's such a pretentious piece of shit, dude.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Yeah. But like, he has done more to shape my worldview than anybody else. Maybe, you know, Pete Quinones as well.
Yeah.
Has been hugely influential on me. But I joke because Vin comes up almost every week on my podcast. Even people who've never heard of him, I have something to say that is sort of just parroting what he's said.
Sure.
So like, I owe him a debt of gratitude. I don't necessarily want to have a beer with him, but like, I want to read and consume everything he produces.
Sure. Yeah. And the guys, you know, that's the sad part about this kind of thing, right? There's people out there who are incredibly smart. I will not take away from Vin Armani's intelligence and, you know, his drive to shape ideology and philosophy. I think he's great at that stuff, but he's such a pretentious asshole that I cannot take his smart stuff seriously at all. It's like, dude, I can't, you know, I've devolved with Vin Armani. It used to be I'd listen to him and be like, wow, that guy's smart, but he's a piece of shit. And then it devolved all the way into now, whenever he speaks, I'm like, dude, you fucked midgets for money, bro. Like, that's where I've gotten to in the conversation with Vin Armani, because he's so, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even want to have a conversation with him anymore. I just want to be like, bro, you were on Showtime late at night fucking midgets for money. I cannot take you anymore.
Have you watched that show?
Oh, I've seen episodes of it when I was a long
I've seen
time
every single episode. My two favorite Vin Armani scenes. One of them, he straps a dildo onto his forehead and eats a girl out while he's like just bouncing this dildo on
Jesus Christ, dude.
It's so funny. And the second one, and I don't know if this is real or just made for TV, but he drank this woman's breast milk, and he like said that he had a fetish for drinking breast milk. Because he had mommy issues or something like that. Like, he said that in one of the talking head segments. It was so weird.
Oh, dude, he's such a fucking creep. I can't with that guy, dude. Like, I want to take him seriously. You know what I mean? I really do, but not like that, man. Not like that. I can't do it. Not when you're such a piece of shit that you look down on every single person from Mount Piety, bro. Like, I can't deal with you anymore. You know what I mean? You stay up there on Mount Piety by yourself in Belize or whatever the hell it is that you ran away to with your tail between your fucking legs while the rest of us were fighting tyranny and trying to, at least, and then turn around and thumb your nose at all of us because we're not doing exactly what you're doing every single day because some of us can't, motherfucker. You know what I mean? And that's I have a real disdain for that guy, even though he's very smart and has done some good things. You know what I mean? I don't know, dude. I don't know. What do you think about this post-libertarian, like, get money, fuck bitches, and screw everybody else, dude? What do you think about that? I mean, that's what I always call it. You know, it's like the rap ideology, dude.
Yeah, get money, fuck bitches, and become Orthodox Christian.
Yeah, that's one too, exactly. I'm Protestant. You know what I mean? So that's not true. Yeah. I'm not really.
What do I think? I don't know. So I've had Andrew, from Popular Liberty, on my show two or three times. He's one of my closest friends. If I needed to talk to somebody, I'd pick up the phone and call him.
He's a really cool, really nice guy, dude.
Yep. He's smart as shit.
Autistic as fuck, but he is so cool. Yep. He's so cool.
Yep. All of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phil Bishop too.
Yeah, I love Tho. He's one of my favorites.
He's clearly on the spectrum, and like they're just, you know, they're really smart, and they're probably too smart for their own good.
Right.
And they've got the same kind of fatal flaw that Rothbard had. You know, if I can just convince people of my ideas, then they'll vote for the people who will enact them.
Right.
And I don't know that we're in an ideas game anymore. I think Tho's got it right that, like, you know, it's just got to be like the Free State Project, only in Florida instead of New Hampshire. Like, make Ron DeSantis the king of Florida and nullify everything. The problem that I have with that, though, and actually, if you listen to Buck Johnson's podcast, where he was broadcasting live with Tho and Matt Erickson from his backyard, like, I confronted Tho. I asked him, like, dude, you have all these plans, but like, what happens when the Democrats come back into power? Because the thing is, most people are middle of the road. Right. Like, you can say, let's get Marxism out of the universities and K through 12 education, and like, most people will be on board with that. But then when you start like just like scorched earth, getting rid of Marxist professors, there's going to be a backlash. There always is. That's how politics work.
Right.
All you have to do is overstep your political mandate. And we're seeing it with the Democrats right now. I mean, the Republicans are about to sweep everything.
Oh, undoubtedly.
And then the Republicans are going to overstep their mandate, just like the Democrats have. The other thing is, I mean, politics in America is not like, oh yeah, we're Republicans. We've got our principles, and we're going to stick to those. And then the Democrats are like, oh, we've got our principles, and we're going to stick to those. No, the Democrats come up with the ideas, and then the Republicans enact them. I mean, what is the Democrat since Obamacare? There hasn't been a single thing that Democrats did. Everything that the Democrats have talked about, though, and this goes back all like forever and ever, the Patriot Act, ever since probably the New Deal, the Democrats come up with the ideas, and then the Republicans legislate them. I mean, Trump did UBI. He did right. Andrew Yang's welfare program. Nixon went to China. Like, that's right. The whole thing. It takes a Republican. It's not It's not like we don't even have a saying for it. We do. It takes a Republican. Like, that's a thing that people say.
Right.
So I don't trust any of them. That's why I think that Matt Erickson and Jason Stapleton, who no longer work together, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Matt. Yeah. So Matt and his wife, Amy, moved to Texas from California right when Jason moved to Arizona, and they no longer work together. It's interesting.
I wonder why. I wonder if there was a falling out or something.
No, they're on good terms.
Jason is another one. I like Jason a lot, but he can be a giant prick.
Well, and I work with Jason. I'm in his mentorship program, so I don't want to talk any shit about him.
Fair.
He's great, actually. I do. I like him. I think that he gets a bad rep. He was on my podcast. I asked him some harsh questions, actually, like the whole abandon his family thing and all the stuff that people say about him.
Right.
But you know, part of it is just part of his act. Like, he definitely wants to cater to a specific audience. And so anybody who's not in that specific box that he wants to market to, he's going to alienate. Right. And I have a feeling Vin Armani probably is around as the same sort of philosophy of marketing.
So, like, the oomph anyway, degree.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess my point, is the wealth, power, and influence model is definitely the sort of model that rings the truest to me.
Right.
I don't think that it's necessarily part and parcel with post-libertarianism. Although LB Muniz, do you know LB?
Yeah.
So
like that guy a lot. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. He's another one I'll talk to for hours on the phone. And I'm not a phone talker. That's why I say this. He wrote a whole like essay on post-libertarianism is more of like a moment. It's like a historical event rather than like a philosophy. There's not really an ism there. And actually, like, if you ask most like integral theorists, they'll tell you that postmodernism is the same way.
Right.
Like, there's not like an overarching philosophy there. It's just that this is what came after libertarianism. And so, you know, you've got the anti-tax and popular liberties stuff, and you've got Jason Stapleton stuff, and you've even got agorism, and you've got like the trad orthodox Christianity stuff that's really, I mean, like Matt Erickson. Well, so Vin was the first one to convert to orthodoxy.
Sure.
Because he's the trendsetter, of course. but now you got Matt Erickson, and I think Buck actually is dabbling in it.
Oh.
All these people are like in the catechumenate for orthodoxy.
Well, I know Buck was already pretty somewhat religious prior
to this.
And Buck is another one Buck is probably my favorite in this entire group that we're talking about of people. Yeah. Buck is literally, he's been one of my favorite people for a long time. In fact, he was the first podcaster that I was a patron of. So I love Buck to death. Yeah.
I do too. I think, he's pretty fantastic. That's kind of the three legs of post-libertarianism, if it is an ism. And then, I don't know, there's also some just people like Pete, who I don't think he's religious. I guess he's probably in the same camp as Andrew.
He's like the get power camp for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's a new thing for Pete too over the last year or so. I mean, Pete used to be almost like Lulbert libertarian to the max. I mean, you know what I mean? And he was always a little gruff and brash, but now he's at a point where it's like, fuck these commies, throw them off the boat, you know what I mean? Yeah. And start getting power, because it's the only way we're going to. And I agree to some extent that we have to attain some amount of power. But my opinion of getting those positions of power is getting into those positions to relinquish the power, right? And that's why I work with. That's why I'm still a part of the Libertarian Party, even though I probably shouldn't be. They don't fucking deserve me, James.
And they don't like you either.
That's fucking hate me, dude. I can't. It's so funny how
I don't know.
It's so funny how much they hate me too. It's like if you guys spent like 3 days at my house with me and my family, you know what I mean? You would see that I'm nothing like what I've been portrayed as in the public by these people. I mean, it's not even close. Not even close.
I did drive our kind of last Lulbert out of the LPMN. She resigned her position on the board and left the party.
Jill Galvin.
That's a familiar name. I've heard that name before. Dude, I live with these people.
I just want to give you a nice salute, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. Jill used to be a friend of mine, so I get it.
Yeah, that's what she said. That's what she said. Although her husband, Ralph, is going to be still doing the entertainment karaoke at our convention. So maybe we haven't completely burned all of our bridges.
Well, I'll be there. So,
yeah, great. Well, karaoke is a ton of fun too, man. You want to see me have fun. Get me, 12 shots in, not to reference a sore spot. And
there's going to be a sore spot if you get 12 shots in, buddy.
Dude. I don't know why Dave Smith said 12 shots. Who can do 12 shots?
Me.
I've never done 12 shots in my life.
I've done multiple 12 shot nights.
Well, you're a unique individual, Josh.
I don't know.
I guess I don't know what my maximum drinks is. Like, I'm kind of a lightweight. You can't tell by looking at me, but like once I've had about three, I'm starting to feel it.
Sure.
And then at five, I'm done. Like I'm not driving home.
Kind of thing. I worked in the bar and restaurant industry for like 10 years, man. I can really pound them back when I need to. Yeah. It's not a tolerance, but you learn how to like compose yourself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not a tolerance. Well, I can be this drunk and I can still function as a human. You know what I mean?
You kind of know your limits more than just like slamming into them like a brick wall.
Yeah. I was the guy who'd show up to the bar and take three shots in the first 5 minutes I was there before I even started talking to anybody. You know what I mean? Like I know I'm a big guy. I'm not a little guy. I'm 6'2", 240. Yeah. You know what I mean? Not a small guy, but, I can definitely do 12 shots. I've had multiple like full bottle whiskey nights. You know what I mean? Full bottle.
Boy.
Yeah. I don't do it anymore. I have seven kids now. You can't do this shit anymore. You know?
Man. I mean, you could. You're coming to Minnesota. You've heard about our hospitality suite, right?
I don't know
what the Minnesota convention is.
I have never been to a Minnesota state convention. It's one of the state conventions. I've been to Minnesota, I think twice. I know I was there for the LNC meeting not too long ago, and I was there for something else too, but not a state convention. I can't remember what I was there for. I've been to so many fucking states over the last 5 years, James. I can't even remember half the reasons I was in some of these states.
Okay, well, let me tell you. It's too late to become a delegate. Like, if you want to join the party, you can't vote at our convention because we've got a seasoning rule.
Sure.
But like, I recommend that anybody who can make it to Minnesota the first weekend in April do it. We've got our convention. There's a hospitality suite, which is basically all the free drinking you can do all day long. Like, everyone is just drunk. It's insane. It's the most fun convention I've ever been to, and I've been to a few. So I recommend it. Plus, you'll get to cheer on the Mises people, which I guess we're going to be kind of sweeping it this year, which is nice.
Which is really good. No, I'm going to have all the kids with me. We're driving there and I'm bringing the family. Oh. Yeah. So you guys,
really?
Yeah,
you're not making them come to the convention though, are you?
No, and I won't. And like they went to the Iowa State convention with me and they kind of hung out in the little lobby outside on their tablets and stuff. And I would go in and out and take care of them and then go back in and do, voting and stuff. So it'll probably be something similar, but I'm actually probably, cause it's in Minneapolis, right?
Yeah, well, it's in Bloomington. It's the same city as the Mall of America. So, right. If y'all wanted to go to there's an amusement park and stuff inside the Mall of America. Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. Because when I brought two of the kids up there for the LNC meeting. Two? I think only two came with us. And that's what I did when I was at the LNC meeting. I sent them over to the Mall of America, and they went to the Crayola. We got, season passes, the Crayola experience, because it was the same price as tickets. So they had – and it's only a couple hours away. And so they went and hung out at the Mall of America. And then when I was done with the meeting, I went and met them down there and had dinner. And that place is fucking fantastic, by the way. It's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. I'm not a big fan of malls, but actually there's two malls in the world that I like. I like the Mall of America and then North Park Mall in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, too. I lived in Dallas. Really? I lived in Dallas briefly. So I know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, briefly. I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan, so I'm like kindred spirits with Dallas, even though it's kind of becoming a liberal shithole these years.
Is it really? Yeah, I guess it kind of is, huh? Yeah, like the Dallas rough. County... The thing is, in Texas, you've got, instead of like the mayors don't have a ton of power, but the county judge, which is like the mayor of the county, I guess, or the governor of the county or something, he does. And so in Dallas, it's not the mayor that's doing all the fucking mandates and stuff. It's the county judge. They keep just new mandates every few months, it seems like. Like right now, I think they're under a mask mandate. But the thing is, like, nobody follows it. My mom, she doesn't even own a mask. Like, she, you know, it's...
That's how it was here. That's how it was here in Iowa too. They did like 2 weeks of a mask mandate in the beginning of all this shit. And that's it. That's all that we had. It was like 2, maybe 3 week mask mandate, and nobody fucking wore them. Nobody paid attention to it whatsoever. Oh. And now I haven't seen a mask in Iowa in months and months and months and months. Like even the people that were scared and were wearing masks are no longer wearing masks here.
Yeah. Well, in Minneapolis, I don't do really anything in Minneapolis. It's like you talk about a liberal shithole. Like we've got our city council is almost 100% Democrat. The only non-Democrat member of the city council is a like DSA socialist,
which is really just a Democrat too, as well.
Yeah. So that's that. I don't know what the mask culture is like in Minneapolis. I do know that I've been to a ton of parties. And like, you know, when they lifted the mask mandate, nobody was wearing them. From my experience, but it's limited. The thing is, I go to the gym and I do all my grocery shopping and like everything else basically in one suburb called St. Louis Park. And like, I've just been living like normal, going to the grocery store, like maybe 40% or so are wearing masks. At the gym, hardly anybody does. Even the staff doesn't wear masks. But like, I was going to go to the car dealership and get my car worked on in St. Louis Park. And I asked them like, hey, do you guys have a mask rule or whatever in your lobby, I could just wait there for you to finish changing my oil or whatever. And they were like, yeah, well, St. Louis Park has a mask mandate, so we're you know, required to comply with that. I was like, oh my God, I've been hanging out in St. Louis Park for, you know, 2 years. I had no idea there was a mask mandate in place.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, everybody kind of bucks, which is in Minnesota, especially being the bluest state in the country, is good to know.
Oof. I don't know. Bluest state in the country, dude. I don't know about
okay,
that.
Okay. We're the only state that voted for Walter Mondale in 1984. So like we're the
original.
Voted for. Yeah. We've been blue since Nixon or whatever the last time Republicans swept.
But I'm from California. And I got to tell you, I'd venture to argue that it's the bluest state in the country, dude.
The California and Massachusetts and so forth are definitely the most, and you know, New York,
of course
definitely the most progressive states in the country. But as for like partisan Democrats, I think we've got everybody beat.
It's so weird to think about that in like this, the middle of the country. You know what I mean? Because you're like, you're really the only ones in the middle of the country like that. Mm-hmm. You in Michigan, I guess.
Ooh, Curtis Yarvin just posted on his Substack. That reminds me, Curtis Yarvin is another one who's had a huge influence.
I like Curtis a lot.
Getting back to that sort of journey thing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Curtis Yarvin.
I have recently come out as right wing. Like I have always been like the, you know, I'm not left or right. I'm libertarian.
Yeah.
The
bumper sticker.
Whatever. Yeah. No, I am like, it's hard for me to talk about even calling myself right wing, because like if you had asked me a year ago, I would have told you that right wing is not even something that has a definition. Like and I still am like, you know, what one person calls right wing, another person might just call like, oh, that's just a subset of the right. That's conservative. It's not necessarily right. You know, that kind of thing. But I've come to the conclusion, first of all, that linguistic nuance is a thing of the past, least for
big
now.
Time. Big time.
We have entered a phase in history where your cultural team is what matters. What you call, you know, right wing and left wing really doesn't. So, you know, I mean, that's a little bit depressing, but also like, I don't feel the need to fucking debate with everybody on Facebook now, which is kind of nice. So yeah, I guess like my definition, if you asked me like, what's the difference between right and left? I kind of like the hierarchy definition, except that I do draw a line between natural and artificial hierarchy. I think the left loves artificial hierarchy. If they can create their own hierarchy where like, for instance, you know, black people are at the top of the heap and, you know, black people who are race traitors are at the very bottom of the heap. Then that is definitely a left wing hierarchy that they just kind of made up. So, you know, that's why like Larry Elder, was it Larry Elder running for governor in California?
California. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's why they called him the black face of white supremacy.
Dude, I couldn't like, believe that. I was just my jaw dropped wide open. I was like,
it's what? Because he got uppity. He's an uppity N word who, didn't know his place. So he's the black face of white supremacy. He's not a black guy who has different, a different worldview from, you know, you LA Times or whoever it was. So that's the left wing artificial hierarchy. A right wing natural hierarchy is just the stuff that happens. It's like, I mean, it's Hoppean hierarchy basically. Right. It's the people who form the natural elite in society. And I have concluded that like no form of government is capable of governing a large body of hundreds of millions of people, but like any form of government, whether it's monarchy or anarchy or, you know, just whatever, is capable of a well-ordered society if there's few enough people in it.
Right.
That makes sense. Like democracy at the municipal level, especially like small towns in New England who've been doing it for 300 years. I think democracy is great there. It doesn't work in a city like Minneapolis or maybe even Des Moines. I'm completely rambling. I'm completely off topic.
What no, it's totally about? Fine. I wanted to go back to the bigotry of low expectation is what I wanted to talk about. It's fun. First of all, Level Zero, thanks for being a member for 5 months, man. He said Minneapolis is bad for mass. He has family there. I was talking about this last night. I was on Alex Steen's show, Conspiracy Castle, who's really fucking hilarious, by the way. This is the guy who trolls the city council meetings all over the country. I'm sure you've seen his videos.
There's a guy named Steen who's hosting a conspiracy podcast.
Yeah, no shit, right? But he's the guy that you've seen trolling the city council meetings electronically. He pops on and starts talking like he just did one.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy. Yeah. Yes,
I was on his show so last funny. Night. He's fucking amazing, nice. Dude. He's hilarious. He screeches a lot, but he's hilarious. And we were talking about this last night. How you know. It's I'm from the hood, right? Like I'm from the ghetto. Like I'm really from the hood. I was one of like two white families in my entire projects that I grew up in. I could tell you that those people, those inner city youth, the black people and even the inner city, like gay people, like those are not the people that are like, you know, oppression. They're not the ones doing it. It's always, always like almost 30 something middle to upper class, rich white liberals that are doing this shit always, and it's because and they're the same fucking people
the neighborhood I grew up in
and they're the same fucking people that'll walk on the other side of the street when they see a black person coming, you know what I mean, and then go around and say, oh, black people are being oppressed and I have to protect them, and it's like, dude, I just saw you grab your purse and walk across the street when the homeboy over here came walking down the street. Like you're the racist, and you're trying to atone for your own inner racism by moving your own Overton window so far in the other direction publicly that you're virtue signaling. That's really what's going on.
Well, and they acknowledge it.
Oh yeah,
that's the thing. Like they acknowledge their what do they call it? Fuck, unconscious bias.
Right.
Like they know that they have it. The thing is, like, I think that they might be projecting a little bit on the rest of us. Like, you know, I mean, I admit, like, most of my friends are white. I've got a couple of mixed race friends. I don't know if I have any like actual like full black friends, but I mean, it doesn't matter. Like,
it's really, really cold where you live for black people, bro. I'm not gonna lie.
It's true. It's true. I mean, we've got a lot of Chicago transplants. Actually, you know, my next door neighbor just recently moved. They bought a house, you know, nearby. Like, I live in the ghetto now. I live probably similar. Digs to what you grew up.
I grew up in Oakland, dude.
Oh yeah. Well, now I'm in North Minneapolis. It's not quite Oakland. Although, yeah. Have you seen those passive aggressive maps where they like map out the city and give it like just the worst like politically incorrect names of all the neighborhoods?
Yeah.
Mine is. I live just south of police are afraid to go here.
Yeah.
In North Minneapolis. So like I, you know.
See, I mean, grew up in police like, do not go here. That's where I grew up. Yeah. Like legitimately, that's where I grew up. So.
My area is so bad that it wasn't even hit by all those white people who were rioting for George Floyd because like they're scared to come here.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, it's.
That's the funniest shit I've ever heard. The white people that were rioting for George Floyd were too afraid to go into the black neighborhoods. Go figure.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, well, no. I don't want to downplay that. Like they were in minority neighborhoods. Like what happened in those neighborhoods is tragic, dude. Absolutely tragic. I've drove through there. It's still not rebuilt. It absolutely breaks my heart to see what happened in South Minneapolis. But like that's not the ghetto in Minneapolis. Right. Like it's a lot of Somali people, it's a lot of native people. The yeah, and it was like, and it was like really hard hit.
A lot of like foreign owned businesses and like minority owned businesses. It's like you guys are out there protesting for racial equality while you're burning down racial minority built businesses. It's fucking idiots.
Absolutely nuts. Yeah. Well, and they have no idea. Like, I mean, even like the Target and the Cub Foods. I don't know. Cub Foods is the big grocery store chain. That were in that, like right across from that police station, those places were hit. They were completely looted and like they weren't burned down like the police station, but you know, I mean, they were out of business for a long time. And like, what about all those people that work there? That's hundreds of people, dude. Like that's a lot of people who were out of work for weeks and weeks and weeks and couldn't feed their families. You know, I mean, they might've gotten a little pittance from unemployment.
But
like, these are people who live in those neighborhoods. It's not even the business owners who like, you know, I mean, as a libertarian capitalist or whatever, my heart goes out to those business owners too, because I understand that their insurance doesn't pay for that stuff. Contrary to what the rioters were saying, but like their employees and the employees of even the big businesses who I don't necessarily, you know, love, and they're not my favorite people in the world. You know, Target's super woke and, you know, Cub kind of mistreats their employees and has shitty selection and stuff like that. But you know, whatever. These are people who live in those neighborhoods that were really, really desperately impacted by this. And it's not like they were getting bonuses from their employer for it. I don't know. It absolutely, the lack of human decency from the people who were justifying what was going on in 2020 here in Minneapolis and across the country is, it soured me on any sort of, if I had any sympathy towards those movements, and I did, it's gone.
Yeah,
like
I did too.
I'm as anti-cop as I ever have been, but I am not as pro BLM as I ever was.
Like, hi kids, do you like violence?
Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
Well, and I got in this argument with the Be Mutualist on Twitter the other day. I was part of the Occupy movement. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in 2011, 2012. And I was stumping for Ron Paul at Occupy. Right. Like I was, you know, we're trying to talk about the dangers of the Federal Reserve and what's going on and why most of your problems are created by the state and the Federal Reserve. And but I was really sympathetic to the Occupy Wall Street movement, even though, you know, I'm like, you know, I wasn't like a full blown like right libertarian yet. You know what I mean? I was still kind of coming out of my neocon phase, but Ron Paul had really pulled me out in 2008. And then it took me a long time. I found Rothbard. And then I tell people that, Ron Paul got me into politics. Murray Rothbard radicalized me and Nick Sarwark pissed me off enough to get involved. Right. Like that was my, that's like my whole progression. Right. You know, I was sympathetic to those people on the left that were like anti-war and anti-cop and anti even big banks and anti, you know, even the anti-corporations lefties. And I understood it. I understood the
problem. Didn't understand it until COVID. I didn't understand any of that until COVID. I thought that, you know, I understood cronyism's kind of a problem, but like, that was, you know, the first, in a free market, like, we'd probably have something like these billionaires and these banks.
Well, that was the first speech I heard by Ron Paul. He was talking about cronyism. And so that was really what had stuck with me at the time. You know what I mean?
I didn't quite grasp that, like, without cronyism, you wouldn't have this.
Right.
Like there would be no Wells Fargo or I can't name any banks because I'm drunk, but like, I don't know. Any of these companies that exist today that were benefiting directly from COVID, like they would not exist in a free market.
Right.
That is how distorted the markets are. Like, it's not just that, these people benefit a little bit from regulation and they get bailed out and stuff. No, they wouldn't exist. Right. Like, it's not that they wouldn't have, that they would have been given a chance to fail in 2008. They wouldn't have existed in the first place in 2008. Like, there would not have been a 2008 recession.
They would have failed a long time before 2008.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially Wells Fargo. Because Wells Fargo has mistreated their customers for fucking ever, dude. Ever.
I know.
It blows my mind.
It's the only bank with ATMs in Texas and Minnesota, though. So, like, I've been with Wells Fargo for 20 years.
I was with Wells Fargo for a long time, and then I left and went to U.S. Bank, and U.S. Bank sucked ass. And now I literally have an online bank checking account that I use that's, like, some small offshoot and community credit unions. That's it, dude. I won't do the fucking big banks anymore. I'm done. I'm done with them. Yep. And even then, it's like every time I get a paycheck, every time I get a direct deposit, in my head, I'm like, pull it all out, put it all in Bitcoin, like right now, do it all, fucking every dollar. Like, that's where I'm at, dude. That's where society has driven me to. It's like, I no longer want to have fiat currency anymore. I want to just put it all in Bitcoin.
I'm putting like $100 a week in Bitcoin and Ethereum.
In my opinion, it's smart.
I don't make a shit ton of money. So like $100 a week is a lot of money to be putting in it. And like, I'm kind of hurting right now, but yeah, you're right. I mean, seeing what Canada's doing with bank accounts right now, like, I don't want to be a dissident. When they're closing down bank accounts.
That's it. That's exactly. And that's why I keep telling, you know, the people who watch my show, it's like, I'm not giving you financial advice, but Canada banks just froze the fucking accounts of people that were dissidents to the government. Okay. They froze their accounts. They were breaking no laws. They were peacefully protesting fucking tyrannical mandates, and they froze their bank accounts, dude. Do you really want your money in that system? Is that really where you want your money to be? I can't give you financial advice, okay? But I can tell you that for me and my family, I don't want my money in banks anymore. Like, I'm done. I'm done with these banks. They are just as complicit in all of this tyranny that you have been dealing with over the last fucking 2 decades or however old you are. I'm almost 40. I forget. I don't even know how old I am anymore. But they are complicit in all this shit. The banks are. And you know that. Papa Ron Paul told you that. Fuck, Bernie Sanders told you that. Okay? You know what I mean? When Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul are agreeing on shit, you really got to sit down and think to yourself, like, hey, man, maybe I need to really take a better look at this stuff. Because they do. And they agreed on the anti-war stuff, too. You know what I mean? When you have somebody like Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, we know he's a democratic socialist or a communist even, but he's not a state-based, he kind of came from that like same like red and black flag style area. And then you have people like Ron Paul who are like as fucking right as you can get, as traditionalist as you can get, as absolute, you know, constitutionalist or even anarcho-capitalist in my opinion as you can get, and they come together in the same ideological space on an issue. You need to sit down and think about what the fuck that means, dude. You know what I mean? You really do. And the banks are one of them. The banks are a big one. So I don't know.
I think we've got like in kind of all three branches of American political, whatever, like the libertarian, the Republican and the Democrat. And I consider libertarian like one of the branches because while we're not a huge party, like I do think that there are more libertarians than we think there are, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not like Gary Johnson. Oh, I'm fiscally liberal and socially conservative, and I think most people
fucking
are that.
Bumper That's stickers, dude.
But
I just want freedom lifetime, James.
Yeah. Oh my God, Josh. I swear to God, in Reno, when people start saying that shit, I'm taking the mic. That's all I'm doing. I'm going to go up and I'm going to take the mic from their hand. I'm going to say, stop saying that, dude. It's just the
right, not left, just free, bro.
Jesus Christ. A world set free in our lifetime.
We need a world like set free in our lifetime. And it's like, dude, people have been saying that for fucking 50 years of this party. Get a better tagline. Jesus. And then Joe Jorgensen gets up on the stage and like, I just want an America that's like one big Sweden, armed and neutral. It's like, shut up, lady. You've been saying that since the fucking 70s. Like, oh my God, these people piss me off, dude.
I'm going to ask Joe, like she's coming to Minnesota convention. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask her like, who ran your campaign? Like who made your messaging? It's I don't think it's her.
It was Steve Dosbach and that other jabroni old guy that's running for vice chair now, Job Hopman.
I don't know either of those people. That Dosbach name sounds familiar, but I don't know who it is.
Steve Dosbach was the chair of this party when Ron Paul got the nomination for president in 1988.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was a good chair. He was a good chair, but he has gotten really radicalized against the radicals in this party over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And now he's like all in on the fuck Mises, like anti-Mises caucus stuff, which sucks because I liked and respected Steve. And now I've seen him talking shit about me. And I'm like, dude, fuck you. I did nothing. I was nothing but nice to you. You know what I mean? And I was the one, if you remember, and I regret it. And it's one of the reasons why I refused to put olive branches out there anymore. I was the one, yep, after Joe Jorgensen got the fucking nomination, that went around to the Mises caucus and was like, look, dude, we got to support her. You know what I mean? We got to put our good faith effort out there to hand an olive branch out. You know, we got Spike Cohen on the ticket, so we got a radical out there messaging. Yep. We had to support her. And I was the one who did that. I was the one who fucking did that. And they made me look like an asshole. You know what I mean? And it's like, and I know that Joe Hotman had a lot to do with that. And I know that Steve Dossbach had a lot to do with that. And to spit in the face of the guy who's, you know, first of all, at the time was the biggest fucking party recruiter in the entire party. Not to toot my own horn, I was the number one recruiter in the entire party. Okay. And to talk shit about me and the people that I'm bringing in that were part of the reason why Joe got any fucking support. That's one of the reasons why I don't want to give an olive branch. Another reason was, you know, here in Iowa, we had a guy run for chair in 2020 of Iowa. I won't name his name, but he ran as hey, I love the Mises caucus. I'm not ideologically the same, but I like you guys. I like what you're doing. I'd love to have your support. We supported him. 2 weeks later, after he got the chair, appointed the chair, he started talking shit about the Mises caucus. Come to find out, he's embezzled $10,000 from the Iowa State Party and is now looking at jail time.
Oh, fuck.
No more fucking olive branches for these people. No more. I'm done with it. I'm done with it. I won't do it anymore. I will not concede an inch, because if you concede an inch, they'll take a mile, then they'll turn around, spit in your face. When I was the candidate committee chairman for the Mises caucus, okay, which I wasn't very good at, I didn't have time to do. I should have never taken the position, but I knew a lot of candidates, so I was like, well, I know all the candidates, I've been all over the country, that I might be good for this. It was way more than I could do by myself, and I was by myself, I didn't have anybody else helping, whatever. Anyways, but one of the names that was brought up was fucking Sacha Cohn, okay. The guy who's
is that the one who won the race in Illinois and left the party and all that.
And one of the names that came up was Sacha Cohen, and I said no, fucking no. He's hanging out with the audacious guys. He came from the Yang campaign to the fucking Vermin campaign. No, this is not a guy we're going to support. And the Mises caucus fucking gave him a disbursement for his campaign, and now look what he's doing, dude. He's going around. He's putting in queries to the JC in fucking Pennsylvania, and he doesn't even live there. He lives in Illinois to try and stop the Mises caucus, dude. Fuck these people. I don't want to give them an olive branch. They don't deserve an inch of our respect. We need to steamroll everybody, or we will always go back towards the left. Always.
What about people who are like super based, but either hate caucuses in general or like are okay with caucuses, but aren't like, They refuse to join. I'm thinking like Ken Mulman or Kara Schultz.
Kara's great too. Yeah. And I've had to have several conversations with Kara Schultz because I want her to understand that like when I talk about staff, I don't always mean her. I think she's a fucking rock star. She's done amazing things. Yeah. She focuses on the political aspect of politics. I think that's fine. I think she does a great job. But there's some people in this party that I want to steamroll. I don't want them up front driving the car no more. I want them in the back seat or get the fuck out of the car. Like that's
gone.
Yeah. That's where I want them, dude. And there's a lot of people in this party like that. And it used to be, you know, I used to 5 years ago, way back in the day, 5 years ago, when I set out on this journey, if you go look at pictures of me 5 years ago, when I started my first chair campaign, I look 20 years younger. Okay.
I was looking at the just the thumbnail for this, the top lobster art where you're holding guns or whatever. Like you look younger in that drawing.
Yeah.
Like,
and that was just a year ago. Okay.
not to say that you're like getting old. You are. I mean, we're both.
Yeah, I'm getting old.
We're both like early 80s babies. So like I'm getting gray in my beard. And you're getting a little wrinkly and stuff. But like, you have aged. Like you can tell that the stress of all this shit that you're going through has kind of gotten to you.
Yeah, dude. If you look at those pictures from my first campaign, dude, I look like a different person. And I did. I aged. And these people have put me through it, bro. You know what I mean? And I used to have to be like the play nice guy, right? I was running for chair. I was like, oh, look, I wanna work with you guys. I'm way past giving a fuck. You know what I mean? And it's not just the COVID thing. I mean, it's a lot of shit. It's taken me to a point where it's like, either join us or get the fuck out of the way. Like, that's it. That's where I'm at now. I'm not going to give you an inch. I will no longer give these people an olive branch. The caucus has no reason to give anybody olive branches. We don't need to anymore. We're way too fucking strong. We've taken way too much power around the country. They cannot stop us anymore. So giving them an olive branch is really just a, oh, well, sorry you lost. Here's a consolation prize, right? And we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. It's over. That was 4 years ago. We don't have to do that shit anymore. We have the majority. We're going to walk into Reno and storm the whole thing and take it all away. And I can't. I've watched too many people burn us, dude. Too many people have burned us after, you know, using our coattails to get into little positions and do little things. And then they turn around and they shit on us. Steve Dossbach's one of those people. We supported him. We supported his candidate. And he turned around and shit on us. Sasha Cohen's one of those people. Mike Connor from here in Iowa was one of those people. I dropped that name. It just happens. Jaletta Jarvis, we supported her. You know, we supported somebody who was the chair of the Colorado Party who turned around and shit on us, Victoria. I mean, it was over and over and over again. We helped or supported somebody that turned around and shit on us. Fuck you. I'm not doing it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Thanks for the $5 super chat, Marshall Ford. I appreciate you, bro. I'm not doing it anymore. Why should we? Give me one reason why we should. They've put us through hell. I've had these same people call me a deadbeat dad and a drug addict and a couch surfer, man, can't hold a job, a woman beater. I mean, fucking everything. A sexual predator. You're calling a guy raising 7 kids a sexual predator? You better fucking check yourself. You know what I mean? I don't know.
The personal attacks against you are just fucking, I see red when I say that stuff. Like, I can get like, oh, he's racist. Like, you know, if they're calling you a racist, whatever, like, that's not a big deal because, you know, they're obviously just spouting out whatever. But like, when they start talking about your kids and your ability to parent them, especially, like, I take that personally, right? Because you're my friend. Like, I'm not like the type who's like loyal over everything. Like, you know, I mean, I friends come and go as far as I'm concerned, but like, you and I have been friends for years, and like, I know you, like, you know, we haven't met in person a whole lot, like a couple of times, but I feel like when somebody's like attacking my friends like that, just outright lies, like specific lies that actually matter about you as a person. Like, you know, you could be racist. I don't know if you're racist or not. I don't think you are. Everything you said doesn't indicate that. But like, you actually have kids in your house. You are actually fathering these children. Like, for them to call that into question and to call into question, like, you know, your ability to live the life that you've chosen for yourself, I don't know. For some reason, that really hits different for me.
Right. Yeah. And it does for me too. And I, my stepdad, who's only been my dad for like, since 2011, a little over 10 years, you know, ago, he married my mom. I've been calling him dad for a long time now. He's a great guy. I was in Oregon and I went over to the house to visit my mom and my stepdad and my sister. And this was in my first campaign, towards the end of my first campaign. And I was sitting on the couch next to him, and this grown man in his 50s broke down and started crying. And he's like, I don't want you to do politics anymore. It's fucking kill. You know, like, I can't watch these people do this to you anymore. Like, I know your heart and this is not the person you are. And it sucks that they're doing this to you. And it hurts everybody. And if that, like, I'll never forget that. I'll never get that out of my face. Like, seeing this tough grown man like break down in tears because of the way these people were treating me, because they don't know me, you know what I mean? And they're just saying these things. And it hurt. That's how bad it hurt somebody else that wasn't even me. You can imagine what it fucking has put me through, bro. You know what I mean? There was nights where I just wanted to give up, dude. Like, give up. I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Fuck this. Like, nobody knew who I was before I ran for chair, dude. You know what I mean? Like, I worked on Think Liberty. I was a publication guy. I put out a couple articles here and there. I did a little podcast that no one knew about, and it was fucking, it was, nobody knew who I was, and it was blissful. My life is completely different now, dude. Completely different. I don't know.
So you're running for vice chair, right?
Yes.
Yep. Like, we're doing this. All right, good. Cool.
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to be in Reno. I'll definitely, you got my vote.
I appreciate it, man. appreciate it.
I want to tell you, like, Minnesota's LP is so much better than other states' LPs, and I don't know why. But, like, even our, like, our old people, like, our top donor, the guy who gives thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to the party, is, like, just all in for Angela. Nice. Like, he loves Angela. And, like, nobody, like, that is so unheard of from the old, like, the old guard of the party.
Well, I'd say your guys, Minnesota has a lot of radicals. Even, like, the older school libertarians there are very radical, dude. And that's, I think that's what it has a lot to do with. Even Chris, I mean, your chair got arrested for his activism, dude. You know what I mean?
He's great,
dude. Yeah, I like Chris, and Chris wasn't a biggest fan of mine for a long time, and then we had some conversations in person, and I was like, you know, this guy's really cool, and I think he kind of got the same thing, and he's like, well, I'm just gonna lay it out to you, I fucking hate National, so I don't even care. You know what I mean?
Oh man,
he hates National.
He won't go to the LNC. If it has to do with National, he just tones it out. Like, if we overrule him and say, no, we're going to, like, we censured the LNC over Karen Ann, which didn't get published to the public list, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
This is a long ass time ago.
I'm shocked.
Anyway. We censured the LNC. And he was like, he abstained. He didn't want to bring it up for a vote. He was like, his thing is not our monkeys, not our circus. That's what he always says.
And that's who he is. I mean, that's really how he is. He literally checks out of anything National. He hates the National Party, dude.
Yep. Well, and he doesn't like anything procedural. Like, the chair and vice chair of the LPMN are automatically members of the Platform and Bylaws Committee, for instance. He doesn't go to any of our meetings. Like, we he hates that stuff. He wants to get, like, the stuff that he's passionate about is his activism. He goes to every protest and legislation and lawsuits.
Yeah, he's big. He's big into that stuff, dude. And I'll tell you, too, I met up with,
we don't have enough of that.
Matt Kowalski, who was your guys' executive director.
He's our ED.
ED, yeah. Right? Yeah. He's not anymore, from what I understand. I didn't know that. Kara told me that here in Iowa. But he was a really good friend of mine, and still is. I love Matt Kowalski with all my heart.
He's right.
One of my favorite people. But he invited me to a dinner with the Libertarian Party in Minnesota delegates in Louisiana, down close to what's the Bourbon Street? And so I went down there and ate with them, and I didn't know anybody, including Chris. I didn't know Chris either. This was my first campaign. And Chris was just kind of staring at me the whole time while we were having dinner, you know? And I was just like, this guy, he looks like he could beat me up probably. And he's kind of freaking me out. I don't know what's going on here. But he ended up being a really cool guy, man. And then when I came to Minnesota for the LNC meeting, we had a really good talk at the fundraiser afterwards. And he's a really cool guy, man. I like Chris a lot, even if he doesn't like the caucuses or National. Like, he's just a really cool guy, man. Might be wrong. Thanks for the $5 super chat. He said, what if I'm a member of the LP and the Mises caucus, and I can't stand libertarians and refuse to identify as one? Hey, bro, you're in the camp with the rest of us. Don't worry about it.
Welcome to the club. Jeez.
I depending on who I talk to, it really depends on who I talk to, who I identify myself as. If it's like a total normie on the streets that knows nothing about the Libertarian Party, I'll say I'm a libertarian. If it's like a libertarian group of people I'm hanging out with, I'm probably going to call myself an anarcho-capitalist or a voluntarist or an anarchist or just something completely off the wall. I've kind of stopped calling myself an anarcho-capitalist just because anarcho-capitalists, full stop, anarcho-capitalists have made it hard for me to call myself an anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah, that's how I'm about Hoppians. Like, I love Hans Hoppe. Hans Hoppe is my favorite libertarian philosopher, like, living or dead. I like him better than Rothbard. You know, I think he's great. I think he's right about almost everything, including ejecting me from his covenant community. but like, I cannot stand Hoppians, man. Like, you get on Twitter with these people and they're just like, I unfollow. Like, if you have Hoppian in your handle or your bio or whatever, like, I just basically don't follow you.
Some of them are cool. I most of them are cool.
No, they are. I'm being completely general and painting with a huge broad brush.
Sure.
Like, it's my defense mechanism.
Well, I think that, both sides of the Hoppe argument suffer from the same problems. Neither of them have read Hoppe. Like, and I think that's the hardest part for me. There are some really good, like, Jared is amazing, and I love the Hoppian.org people, and they're good friends of mine, but there are some people who are like, I'm a Hoppian, and I'm like, okay, name four things that Hoppians, that Hop's ever said. And they're like, well, covenant communities and
helicopters. They all think he's talking about helicopters.
And it's like dude, Jesus. Like, physical removal, and it's like, dude, I wear a physical removal shirt. And I used to be the same way, too. Not that I didn't stump for Hoppe, I just would tell people I don't know much about Hoppe, so I'm not going to say anything about Hoppe, because I hadn't read Hoppe until last year when I started really getting into Hoppe. So, it's ideology and philosophy matter. If you're gonna talk about them, you need to read them.
Dude, have you ever heard of the show Kings? Speaking of Hoppe a little bit, let me see if I can find
it. Wait, what's it
so
about?
I think it's on. Okay, so it's about like probably America following this huge, like maybe World War III or something, sort of a post-apocalyptic thing. But the government is a monarchy, and the king is played by the guy from I can't remember what he's from.
The dad from Hot Rods?
No, his name's Ian McShane. I'm trying to remember what he's in. Hang on, let me just pull it up. From Deadwood.
Ian McShane was the dad in Hot Rod with Andy Samberg. Remember the one who was like
Andy
dying?
Samberg. I haven't seen Hot Rod.
You've never seen
Andy
Hot
Samberg
Rod? It's one of the funniest movies ever made. Okay,
I know. Well, so Andy Samberg is like my celebrity crush too. I have a thing for Jewish dudes. Like I made a joke about Alex Steen hosting a conspiracy podcast. I love Jewish guys. I don't know what the deal is there. But like the curly like fro hair, the big nose and stuff, I just love it. So he plays King Silas, who is sort of like a king who's sort of on the decline, in this monarchy that is probably America in the future. And he's clearly Saul from the Bible, because the up and comer is this guy named David, who isn't his son, but he becomes like the people's king. And he becomes like the heir apparent. Anyway, so much of it reminds me of Hoppe, and to an extent like Yarvin and the monarchists and stuff. It shows how like monarchy is like, it's also a viable system of governance. But also like, it's just a good show. It only lasted for a season. It was on, I think it was on NBC on Saturday nights, which is like where it's, you know, where primetime goes to die. Nobody watches TV on Saturday nights. It was such a good show though. Like if you have a chance to watch it, check it out. I think it's like $3 on Amazon Prime or something.
I talk all the time about, you know, people hate when I say it, but I definitely take a benevolent monarch over democracy any day.
Everybody says that. That's
can always kill the king.
That's conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
Like we all say that, but then, you know, when the rubber hits the road, everybody wants democracy.
Yeah.
And democracy, like it's not, I don't know. I mean, it's a phrase, but like, it's the God that failed. It's clearly put up on a pedestal, but there's a reason that like prior to the early 20th century, every political philosopher in history has hated democracy.
Right. Right. It devolves into what you're seeing today. It's been 300 years, not even, and this is where we've gotten with democracy. Look at what's going on. Look what's going on around you. It doesn't work.
And even here, they wouldn't have called it a democracy prior to Wilson. Wilson's the one who popularized the word when he, you know, invaded all of Europe to make the world safe for democracy.
Right.
Anyway.
Sucks.
I don't know.
Well, man,
I'm not very good at history, so like I don't like to talk about World War I and stuff like that. But I do know that
I wanted to be a history teacher. That was like what I wanted to do my whole life. Yeah, I love history, and I'm really stoked right now. If you go on my marketplace, I got these two books from 1700s from the Protestant Church. In fact, I think they're probably historical artifacts of some sort. It's about how the Protestant Church works, basically. One of them was written in 1710, which means in France, in French, which means it was written under King Louis the 14th. Who was the one that was basically oppressing the Protestants. So this was a person in France writing this book in French as a Protestant about the Protestant church under an act that was basically like, you're not allowed to be Protestant in France, dude. So it was pretty cool that I have this book. And then I have another one that's from written in 1750. And that one is, the first one is the French history of the Protestant church. Second one is the French Latin breviary of the Protestant church. That was written under King Louis the 15th, who was actually the one that kind of stopped the Protestant oppression. But I have these books, and I actually emailed the king or the Church of England today to say, hey, I have these books. If you guys are interested, I don't know if you have them already, but if you don't, you might be interested in these books, because, you know, they're kind of pseudo Protestant or whatever at the Church of England. And so I'm just waiting for that email back. That's going to let me retire early, bro. You know what I mean?
Do you happen to know the names of any of the like early Protestants in France? I didn't realize really that it. John Calvin. Calvin was actually Jean Calvin.
Yeah,
like and, that. I guess he was. I guess he was French, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's cool. These books. So these books, 1710 is only 120 years after Protestant was a thing. I mean, Protestants. Yeah, it started with Martin Luther in 1590 or something like that. So in Germany, I think, right? So that's it's pretty cool that I got these books that are like historical artifacts. I just hope the Church of English reaches back out to me and they're like, hey, yeah, we'd love to offer you $1.5 million for those books so we can get them in our library.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
And actually, if they're Calvinists, you could check with the Presbyterian Church USA. They might want to take them too, because that's the sort of the Calvinist sect in America is the Presbyterians.
I'm certain that these books belong in a museum or in a church somewhere, not sitting in my shelf at my house with my seven children. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's really cool to be like holding these historical artifacts, but they're like in dock boxes and shit, you know? And I'm like, I don't feel right having these around all the kids. I gotta go hide them, you know. I don't know what they're worth either. I had them appraised by the antique appraiser people that I use, and they couldn't give me an answer. They were literally like, I don't know, a lot. That's what they told me. I was like, I want to know what they're worth. They're like, I don't know, a lot.
Is Jacob Winograd in the chat?
I don't think so. I was talking to him, or I showed him the pictures and stuff of them earlier. The fucked up thing is, yeah, I got them from a K-Bids auction out of Minnesota from an estate sale. They were sitting on somebody's shelf, and I got them for $15, James.
That's cool.
I gotta
get into this K-Bids stuff, man.
Yeah, dude.
I'm trying to quit my job. Like, I love my job. I'm learning so much. Like, I'm learning how to do JavaScript and shit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't know how to code. But I'm having to learn it because of the promotion I got in November. Like, it wasn't even the job that I applied for that I'm doing. And it's great. Like, I'm just learning so much. But, I don't want to be working for a paycheck. I would much rather be working for
six streams of income, bro. You gotta get six streams of income. And that's how it works. Yeah. I'm telling you, that's been our goal too. My fiance is really big on listening to these, financial advisors and stuff and six streams of income. Gary Vaynerchuk said it too, man. Gary V, yeah, he's the same one. And in fact, what I'm doing now with this reselling thing is exactly how Gary V started, man. You know what I mean? Go buy VHS tapes, dog. Like, seriously, go to your Goodwill right now.
Yeah.
You can get Disney VHS tapes for 75 cents and turn around and put them on eBay and sell them for $5 a piece.
Or even blank VHS tapes go for a lot. And floppy disks.
Yep.
I sold a, 50 cent package of floppy disks for like $12 on Amazon.
Yeah, dude. It's crazy. It's crazy what people will buy. Books, every book you find that you could buy for under a dollar, you'll be able to sell it on eBay for a price. Whether it's $1, $2, $3, you're going to make profit off it. Just start picking shit up. But you got to grind. It's like a grind. It is a real grind.
If you like treasure hunting, that's the thing for you.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. Like going to Goodwill and just finding stuff that's valuable. I used to do FBA. I never really got into eBay. I didn't want to have to ship things piecemeal. But with FBA, that's a fulfillment by Amazon, you can just send them a big ass box. You send it to the Amazon warehouse and they distribute it for you.
Oh shit. Really?
You pay a little bit of a fee, but like that fee is, that's the price of convenience basically. Right. I was making a good amount of money. I mean, $700-$800 a month just for going to Goodwill every other Monday.
Well, and that's what we do. So we have the big Goodwill here in Des Moines. The one that before it goes out to the Goodwill stores, they bring out the bins. And they just dump.
Oh, yeah.
They dump all this shit in the bins, and it's like glorified dumpster diving, bro. And you're like, you go through them, and then you put it all in the cart, and they weigh the cart, and you pay per pound. So it's like $1.50 per pound, right? So like, we can fill a fucking grocery cart full of like thrift clothes and books and tapes and all kinds of shit, and we walk out of there, and it was like $65, and we could turn around and make $1,000 off it.
Yep. My boyfriend's sister does that like full time. That's just her job. She goes to the Goodwill. She really goes to the Goodwill outlets, all the stuff that's been rejected from their retail stores that are just literally in the bins.
Right.
She just goes and weeds through them and just resells it on Poshmark. That's her job. Like, she just does it full time. It's so awesome.
That's what my fiance is doing.
I admire her.
That's what my fiance's doing.
I admire her so much.
She's like, and we're both like treasure hunters, so it's like, it's a lot of fun for us. But she's like, she's got on the other side of the computer here, she's got her whole setup with a backdrop and lighting so that she can take pictures.
Oh,
and she's doing all clothes and stuff. And so she's like, and now she's getting all into it. She's like doing live videos. So she's like, yeah, my drop on Friday. She's talking about like dropping. It, to me, it's so funny because she's like, oh yeah, I'm going to drop this new outfit on Friday, right? And in my head, I'm like, you paid 42 cents for that outfit. 42 cents.
Yep. It's insane.
It is wild, dude. Smug Scotty, thanks for the $2 super chat. He said, Mises has to move and rid LP of Dem rep operatives. So that's what we're doing, dude. That's what's been happening. Look at how far Nick Sarwark has fallen, and that's all our doing. That's all our doing, 100%.
I have to tell you, like, I almost feel bad for people. Like, Andy Craig, for instance, he wrote that little letter of resignation from the party.
I never felt bad for that guy. Fuck him. But go ahead.
Fuck him, for sure. Like, he's awful.
Yeah.
But, like, he in that letter said, like, I discovered libertarianism from the Gary Johnson campaigns. Yeah. And, like, dude, if you've discovered libertarianism from Gary Johnson, then you probably are in the wrong place.
Yeah, he's like a John Stossel buttlicker. You know what I mean? Like, he thinks that the peak libertarianism is the Cato Institute. If that's what you think, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. Like, that's where I'm at. You know what I mean? I just don't care.
I don't think you're allowed to talk bad about John Stossel.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to, but I mean, John Stossel is not the peak of libertarianism, dog. I mean, he's like the moderate. Here, let me give you like the very basics. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so if that's the mountain of libertarianism for you, you haven't gone far enough for me, and I don't want anything to do with you. Yeah, I don't want to get invited to the champagne parties at the fucking press club in DC, dude. Like, I want to burn the place to the ground. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that literally, YouTube. I mean, I want it to disappear. I don't want it to be a thing anymore. I don't think we need it. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm at.
I really offended Matt Welch from Reason with a cocktail party reference once.
Yeah, well, he
like, I don't even own a tuxedo.
He really wants to go to those cocktail parties, dude. I promise you. He really does. And Matt Welch can be a really nice guy, but he can also be a giant piece of shit too. So
I do. Yeah. I like Matt. Of the Reason people, Matt and Nick Gillespie and JD Tuchilli, he's fucking awesome.
There's a couple really good people at Reason, and there's a handful of really good people at Cato too, dude. Don't get me wrong. Corey DeAngelis is one of my favorite based motherfuckers out there, dude. Like, but he works for Cato, and he knows that he can do what he does from Cato very well. So, hey, more power to him. But he also knows that Cato is not the pinnacle of libertarianism in the United States either.
At the Tom Woods 2000th episode thing, I met a guy who does video for Reason, and yeah, he's aware of who he works for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of gave
his name start with a J by any chance?
I don't remember. Remember his name.
Because I know who he is. He reached out to me a while ago when I was running for chair the first time. He's like, hey, I want to do a video with you about your chair run for Reason. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah. And then it just went quiet, silent. And I'm pretty sure what happened was he went and told them, and then they were like, yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
And
Catherine Mingy Ward. Like, Catherine Mingy Ward, I was so excited because Nick Gillespie, oh, he was so awful. And then she's like, oh, she's an ANCAP. And you know, back then, like, the minarchist versus anarchist debate was just all that mattered in libertarianism. Like, that's what the debate was. And Nick Gillespie, he hates anarchists. He doesn't even consider us libertarians. And here's Catherine Mingy Ward. She's read Rothbard once.
Yeah, one time
Jesus
ever.
Christ.
Yeah.
I would give my soul to I've talked about this. I don't remember if it was on podcast or Twitter or what, but Reason, I gave my story earlier, but Reason, Nick Gillespie specifically, like I couldn't afford a subscription to Reason at the time. Like I was kind of pretty hard out. And so I wrote Nick Gillespie an email, and I was like, hey, you know, I can't afford this. I've discovered this Ron Paul guy. I'm really interested in libertarianism. I would love to like just, you know, read more of Reason. And this was kind of before they put everything online for free. And he sent me a free subscription, like just for nothing. Like, he just subscribed me to his magazine.
That's
and
pretty cool.
So like for that, I owed Nick Gillespie like my libertarianism, I guess. So I've always had a soft spot for him. And then, like, you know, when I became an anarcho-capitalist and he was like a minarchist, I really took it. I hated that. And then Catherine was supposed to be our savior, and she has just been awful, absolutely awful. And I take it personally, because that's like Reason was a huge formative thing for me. And they have been so bad during COVID, just absolutely awful. Like their thing with like, a couple of months ago, they were like, oh, hopefully this data from the CDC will encourage more people to get the vaccine. Like, no, nobody trusts the CDC. Like, you're, Anyway, I don't want to get started because we got to wind down. But
yeah. No, I get it. And if
I take it personally.
You know, during the New Hampshire thing, and then back after the convention last year, and a few other times, I've had people, like, I talked about this the other day on the show. I've had people from Reason reach out to me and ask me for quotes and stuff on situations for articles that they're writing, and I'd be like, yeah, sure, and I give them whatever I have to say, and then the article would come out, and it's no mention of my name whatsoever. It's happened to me like 3 times at least. At least 3 times now. And I'm just like, you motherfuckers don't want the truth. You don't want to put out the truth. If you wanted to put out the truth, you'd ask the guy that was part of the whole situation. You know what I mean? And you'd publish the quotes that I gave you. And they don't. They never do. They only publish Nick Sarwark and Joe Bishop Hinchman at the time. And I think they published, who was it last time? Whitney maybe, or somebody. And it was like, you guys didn't even put my quotes in there? Fuck you. I got no use for Reason Magazine whatsoever. Zero. Sorry, man. Wow. No more olive branches for me. They were not formidable for me in my libertarianism. In fact, I didn't find out about Reason until about 6 years ago. So that's where I'm at, dude. That's where I'm at with Reason.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
No problem.
That Reason's not allowed in my covenant community either. So
we can agree that they're awful in 2020 through 2022.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I agree with you. Well, brother, we are definitely at the end of this thing. In fact, we did an hour and a half, which is almost a half hour more. It's a half hour more than I normally do. So I'm not going to be able to do a members only stream tonight because I got to go put some babies to bed and stuff.
That's all right. I'm a member anyway. I would have listened to it, but I'm part of it. So
yeah, I appreciate you being a member, man. I really do.
Seriously. Yeah, totally. You're one of the Patreon people who I never am, like, when I'm redoing my budget, who can I drop? I actually dropped Karen Ann, which I feel really bad about, but yeah. Like in December I was kind of hurting. So.
Sure. Well, if you're hurting, anyway. You're hurting, man. And you know, people come to me sometimes like, hey man, I'm hurting for money. I'm going to have to drop Patreon this month. I don't care, dude. I'm totally cool with that. I mean, the money is good. It's become like a revenue stream that's pretty much irreplaceable for my family at this point. But at the same time, other people have other lives, then my podcast is not more important than your life, dude. You know what I mean? So I get it. I understand. And I've lagged on my patrons recently. You know what I mean? It's been pretty bad. I got to get my shit together and start taking care of my patrons.
Yeah, you were doing 5 days a week.
I was doing patron meetups or member meetups. So we would get together and do Zoom meetings and play games and drink and fucking. I need to bring that back. And you know, when this campaign's taken a lot, when that's over, we'll get right back to it. I promise you. And maybe before then as well. But I am doing at least 1 to 2 shows a week for now. So we'll get back to it eventually. But James, you know, I'm a big fan of you, brother. I appreciate all that you do. Please take care of my Pinocchio doll.
I will. It's in my trunk. It's doing very well. I check on it. I give him a little bottle of milk.
Nice. I appreciate it. That thing is either a complete phony or going to let me retire early. I don't know yet. Nobody can make up their mind on whether it's a one-of-a-kind Barker Pinocchio marionette or if it's a complete fraud Barker marionette. So we'll see what happens. If it's real and I got it for $60 and it's real, you know, we're going on vacation, James, somewhere.
Awesome.
Cool, man. Right, well, cool. Hey, before we go, where can the people find you, listen to you, support you, all that great stuff?
All right. So blackbirdpodcast.com. I'm kind of rebuilding my podcast website. Right now it's hosted by Substack. Go there to subscribe or find Blackbird with James Gentleman on your favorite podcast app at James LJ on Twitter. I just hit my microphone. I know that was really loud. Sorry.
Nah, dude, I got filters on this, dude.
Oh, perfect. One thing, this is something that Matt Erickson said on my podcast, and it's something that I say whenever I guest on someone else's podcast. Liberty is not something you ask for. It's something you create. And this is something that libertarians need to get in their heads. Stop debating shit. Debating isn't going to change anybody's minds. If you want to be free, you have to be free.
Agreed, man. Agreed. And then last night, when Alex Steen on Conspiracy Castle asked me, hey, what do you want to send my viewers out with? I said, please don't comply. That's it. Yep. There's no more debate. Just completely disobey at this point. I mean, that's where we need to go. And you're going to have to take it.
Talking
for yourself.
To you, Ace.
Yeah. No,
yeah, no shit. Ace can keep debating. That's his thing. But yeah, like anybody else.
God bless him too. Because I mean, it's someone's got to stay up all night debating three follower accounts on Twitter, dude. Cause I can't do it. You know what I mean? He's got to take one for the team. I love Ace. He's one of my favorite. Ace been on the show twice and I love that man.
Has he really?
Yeah. He's been on
I
my show.
I need to find those. Those episodes are a lot of fun.
He had one episode where he did his face. And then one episode, his face reveal was on my show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's done two episodes on my show. And then my first or second episode, I had Ace on, but it wasn't actually Ace. It was Clint from Liberty Lockdown.
Oh Lord.
Because it was back when Ace was booking debates and then sending other people to book neocons for him. Like he had El Pulpo went on that neocons show and debated that.
That's so funny.
What's his name? Kevin Cassidy. He was Ace and Kevin Cassidy were going back and forth on Twitter. And he's like, well, come debate me on my show then. And he's like, all right. And he sent El Pulpo as Ace. And it was fucking hilarious, dude. And then
that is hilarious. Yeah, I had no idea. Like I know Ace literally. All I know about him is he's that guy who debates people on Twitter. Like I heard people talking about him, you know, in 2020 or whatever it was, just as Ace, like no last name or anything. I'm like, who is this Ace guy?
It's just Ace.
I had no clue.
Have you not heard any of his podcasts at all?
I have listened to Slurp Gang once.
Oh, sure.
And it's like Timeline Earth. If you're not in on it, you don't get it.
Right.
So like, I don't know. Like the Tower Gang is the same way. I love the Tower Gang though, because I know all those guys.
Right.
I don't know Cotton and Ace and whatever the other guys.
See, I know Ace and I like Slurp. I love Slurp. I think Slurp's great.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, El Pulpo has had some drama with Tower Gang and stuff, but not a podcast, which is Pulpo and Neocon Removers podcast. I love that podcast. I'm actually a patron of that show as well. Low tier, yeah. but I love those guys. Even if they don't get along with some of my other friends and my friends don't get along with them, I don't give a shit. I still love everybody. But Ace outside of Slurp Gang on shows, he did a debate with Brad from what Cato or whatever. What's Brad's name? Last name? He has a show called Based with what's her name?
Oh yeah,
you know Brad.
Dude, he's been on your show. You should.
Yeah, he's been on my show too. I always mess Palumbo. Up his last name. Palumbo. Yeah, that's it.
Palumbo. Yeah.
He did a debate. Ace debated Palumbo with video on Lions of Liberty. So you should find that debate about political violence.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I didn't listen. I should listen to that.
That's a good one. Ace. Yeah. Ace is probably one of the most intelligent men I've ever had on my show ever. So very
Brad Palumbo. We give Palumbo so much shit. And like me being gay, I give him and Dave Rubin. Like Dave Rubin doesn't know who I am, but I know Brad Palumbo sees my tweets at him. And I like Brad, if you're listening, I apologize. Like it's my Twitter persona. Like, you know, whatever. I do your thing, but also Based dash politics is just fucking retarded. Like,
yeah,
you just.
I like Brad. I've had Brad on the show.
I loved his
appearance. Cool, yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, his appearance on your show was great. I loved it.
He did good, dude. He's a young kid that I think is still. I think he's still on his way. You know what I mean? I think he'll get there eventually. Yeah, I really do.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I think he's young, like fresh out of high school almost. You know what I mean?
Oh really?
He's like 20.
I figured he's like 30.
No, he's like 21 or 22. He's very young, dude. Yeah, and I think right. I think he's
I've called
on his way.
I've called him an aging twink before too. So. I apologize for that.
No, I think
you are still not a non-aged twink.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah, I think he's still just a twink, but. Yeah, man. You know, I would definitely check out Ace. Ace has been on my show a couple times. He's amazing. I'm a big fan, and Ace is one of my favorite people in the movement. But brother, I love you to death.
Yeah, we've got it. We've got to stop talking.
I could do this
eventually. All
fucking night long because I don't have to work tomorrow, but I do have to fly to Florida, so I got to go get ready, dude. Nice.
Okay, have fun in Florida. Hopefully, I'll see you in Pennsylvania for sure. I'll see you in Minnesota. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, thank you, brother. I appreciate you coming on.
See ya.
See ya. All right, guys, another awesome episode of Breaks the Cycle. James Gentleman's so cool. Please go support him. Support his show. Any way you can. Support the man. He's a good dude, and I love him to death, and you should support him. He has my endorsement. But also, go check out our sponsors. You can check out toplobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great Break the Cycle pillow. Here, I'll put it close to the camera for you guys. It's really actually kind of cool. It's got the Break the Cycle logo on it. You can put it on your couch when you watch Break the Cycle on your big screen TV at least once or twice a week. It's a good pillow. It's been really comfortable for me. And you can get that at a 10% discount by joining the Patreon or the Subscribestar, or becoming a member of my YouTube channel under all my videos for like $5 a month, I think, $4.99 a month or something like that. And you can get into all the after-hour shows that we have, exclusive content. You get into a private Discord server where you can get all of Top Lobster's new gear up to 2 weeks before it goes to the general public at like a 30% discount. So if you're one of the smaller tier supporters, monthly supporters, it actually really pays for itself if you're buying Top Lobster gear. When he puts out his new gear, he's kind of been lagging recently too. Where you at, Top? put out some new gear, man. No, I'm just kidding. I get to see him this weekend. And anytime Top Lobster and I get together, you know it's trouble. It's like Dre and Snoop Dogg, except that I'm tall and fat instead of tall and skinny, and he's short and thick instead of tall and fat, or something like that. I don't know. Great guy, though, and go support him. He needs it. Trust me, he deserves it after all the work he's done for this movement. And, of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, go check them out if you own a business. I'm telling you, it's worth it. I promise. Guys, I'm leaving for Florida tomorrow. There'll be no more shows this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to have Michael Heiss on the show, and I'm trying to line up some really cool shows for you next week. I'm going to keep them secret in case they don't happen, but I promise you next week's going to be a lot of fun. I will see you Tuesday, I think, is the next show. But until then, don't forget to break the cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and refrain. But I just spammed it in Minecraft. The helicopter part was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just spammed it in Minecraft. A tripper is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control. Because I just banned it in Minecraft. Obviously I would never advocate force, unless it's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse. In Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing I mean, you know it. Your product dinner's getting close from COVID. Holy shit, I think I'm a poet.